Yeah, we're here. We're here. Welcome to the Bass and Treble Podcast. My name is Otoniel.
You're getting formal with your full name. I'm Steve.
Esteban. And this week's album is Green Day's Dookie.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Dookie a little bit, and then we're going to talk about, later on, we're going to talk about Slapping the Bass with Rush. We're going to talk Johnny Cash's drug problem, and this we have a sucktastic song of the day today. It started out the 90s, and somehow a song that has yodeling cracked the top six Billboard spot.
That's great. I can't wait to get to that. And if you haven't already subscribed, go ahead and do that. Plus, you can follow us on Twitter, at Bass Treble Pod. And go ahead and like us on Facebook for all you soccer moms and all you guys who are in Facebook groups. At Treble Podcast for more daily burrito content. All right, cool. So, Steve, this week it was your turn to pick the album in our classic album review. And you picked a dookie of an album. So why'd you – I know you're a big Green Day fan. So why'd you pick this Green Day album?
Yeah, well, this kicked off my love for Green Day. It came out in 1994, and I was, like, probably 13 at the time. And it was one of those albums, like, the rest of the world was talking about Nirvana, and, like, you know, the alternative music was just starting to get big, and this is where I turned to get my alternative music fix. Like, 13 years old. See, that's the thing. For me, Dookie is, like, a very personal album just because of where I was in life. Granted, it's an awesome album, and I think, like, a lot of people dig it, obviously. But I'm having a hard time separating this album from my personal experience. Just because it was like the first time that I stopped listening to my parents' music and like I was out on my own for the first time and like starting to get my own taste for music. And Dookie came out and Green Day had that like video which popped. I was like an MTV fiend at the time.
Yeah, right.
And this band came out and they were like super powerful and they had really vivid video that really stood out from the rest. And I'm like, wow, this is amazing. Yep. So went out to the store, got Dookie, and my life has never been the same.
So like you like Nirvana a lot, but did you ever go to the lengths of like trying to dress or look like, So you liked Green Day a lot. Did you ever go to the lengths of like throwing on the eyeliner and spiking your hair and all that? Or did it not get to the eyeliner, but you still spiked your hair?
None of the above. I bought into the music.
You used gel, right? Like, so when you started using gel, was it before or after Green Day? Because I know one of the things that I admire about them as a band is that they look like a cool band. Like, they have a cool, besides their sound, they got stilo, exactly. I'm pretty sure, one thing that I think is great about this album when I started listening to it, is you're right, it is a powerful album. You know, you like to talk about how the beginning of the album is important, and this album kicks off just, I mean, you cannot say that Green Day is a low energy band by any sense of the word. They are just packed full of energy.
It starts out full force and it keeps going full force all the way through, and it has one of those, you know, like we've been talking about on here before, like an arc to it where it starts out a certain way, kind of builds up its power, kind of dips towards the end and ends up strong, and then it's got the hidden track, of course.
Yeah, it's just it's definitely a song that the whole album has its merits. It's an album. It's not just a bunch of hits hidden by other songs. It's an album.
That's exactly it. And I was telling a friend about this the other day too, how it feels like an album. This album fits together in such a way that when you play it start to finish, to me, it feels like one big song. All the songs are alike enough, and they feed into one another, where, yeah, you can have a single song that stands out on its own, but when you play the entire album start to finish, it just fits together. It feels like it was written in one place at one time. It could have been played, you know, in one take, basically. It just feels like it's a cohesive album.
Oh, I hear you. And I hate to sound like the music playing musician guy, but whoever the recording manager, producer, people involved in this album, they did a killer job. Like, it sounds like you're saying, it sounds like a barroom. It sounds like you can be at a show when you listen to the album.
Yeah, it's Rob Cavallo. He also did American Idiot. He did Nimrod. He did Warning. He did a bunch of Green Day stuff. He did a bunch of stuff with Goo Goo Dolls. And of course, he did Dave Matthews. He was the producer for Big Whiskey and the Grugrux King, which is a great album in itself.
Nice. I love it when a band doesn't try to be something else. Like, they don't sound like they're trying to be something else. They sound like they're trying to be themselves. And that's one of the biggest things that I think I learned and other people learn, and it's very hard to do, is any of these great bands, you got to give it to them for sticking to their guns and being themselves and sounding like themselves. Green Day sounds like themselves. And one thing I will say about Green Day, and it's not anything against them, it's not their fault, but there is that sense that when Green Day came out and like they were coming out in their sound, there was a lot of just terrible wannabe Green Day bands after them. Would you say that? Like, it was just like a string of them that you're like, wait, what? And, you know, my generation, or when I was, you know, coming to age around like the year 1999, 2000, they were just like, I mean, Warped Tour was just all over the place. And
the entire Warped Tour, we can probably blame for Green Day. Green Day was the first one on the scene with that power proto punk. But then we wouldn't have Blink 182 without them.
Right.
Offspring wouldn't be the same. And then there's like a bunch of smaller bands that were popular at the time, like NoFX, Pennywise. Even Rancid, I think, took a lot from Green Day. They might have been out before Green Day, but they're pretty similar. But you're right, Warped Tour is completely Green Day-style type of bands.
Right.
And Green Day never had a problem finding their voice, especially with this album. It just felt natural for them. They had a few albums before this that were kind of like smaller label records, and this is the one where they broke out on the scene, and it caused me to go back and check out those earlier records, and fell in love with those too. It was just like more of the same. They were still kind of finding their voice, but this is where they were just themselves, and they were out there, and they were feeling it.
Definitely. And I feel like it's, you know, it's just a huge influence to popular culture at the time. But a band that I always like to listen to with Green Day is, and I'm going to get it, the guy's name, Perry Farrell. What's that band?
Jane's Addiction.
Yeah, Green Day and Jane's Addiction, they blend really, really well together. And what's funny is, like, early Red Hot Chili Peppers and Jane's Addiction, they sound very similar too. But Green Day, I was putting Green Day together with Jane's Addiction in a playlist, and they blend awesome. Like, Green Day is so precise and fast, and then Jane's Addiction is just like sloppy and fast, but somehow together it's like, it's cool, cool 90s alternative rock. And not all 90s alternative rock is built the same. You know, I've been getting into these like playlists, because I guess I listen to a lot of 90s stuff, and these playlists that they suggest for me, they have some cool 90s alternative songs, but they're just like, meh, you know, like...
Oh, like what else? What would you put up against Green Day that's the opposite?
Of 90s alternative?
Yeah, you're saying there's other stuff out there that doesn't mesh so well with Green
Day.
You
might, like, not, what? Well, you might not like this, but Alice in Chains. Oh, they're like,
yeah,
the
they don't mesh
opposite.
With a whole lot.
Like, they're just like okay. All the other way. And then what's funny is like, I wasn't a big STP fan, and then I started listening to STP because I always thought STP, Alice in Chains, like very similar bands, right? Very similar.
Yes,
sounds.
A little bit darker mood. Like Green Day is young and bouncy, whereas the bands you're talking about are like heroin.
Well, they all sound like they have the guy from Metallica singing too, like the very long syllables, the oh yeah 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 yeah, you know, like dude, it's one word, but it's cool. I'm just saying it's definitely different. They don't mesh well, and you know, I had a I'll leave it at this. When it comes to 90s alternative, I had a really terrible experience with a producer. I think I told you about it in my life, and he was always big on talking about decades, and he was basically like, mm-hmm. popular music died in the 90s. Like, the 90s was a lost period. Like, nothing was, like, it was terrible for the music industry. That's when Napster came out, and all the music was just like crap. And I'm totally the opposite. I don't think that at all. But I will give him a little bit of credit that the 90s was very disorganized. Like, there was not like an organized sound. And I don't know, maybe it was because...
Because you had Color Me Bad coming out at the same time as like Alice in Chains.
Right.
Because you had Ace of Base at the same time as like, you know, Here Comes the Hot Stepper.
What's the name of that band with oh, I love this song so much. We got to do a podcast where we just talk about one-hit wonders. Because we could go on and on about some
That's
good
not a bad idea.
Wonders.
There's plenty of material for that.
What's the Groove Is in the Heart? What's the name of that band?
Oh, Delight.
Oh man, I saw a video. I saw a video of a very early performance of Delight, and
they are trippy as hell.
That white girl singer, the lead singer that dresses like she's in the 70s, like a go-go. She's a killer singer. Like live, she was tearing it up. Like no effects or anything, bro. I was like, wow, that
she's
is so good. Yeah, I love that song though, and it's got that that little whistle pipe thing in it. That.
Yep, I think it's got Q-Tip in there too.
Does it really?
Was that Q-Tip?
I had some rapper in it. A lot of popular songs in the 90s had random rappers in it. So you said this was prototypical. Man, you're a little encyclopedia of music genres. Ever tell you that?
Well, no, I think I used proto-punk wrong. Proto-punk is a term used to describe the number of performers who were important precursors to the punk rock movement of the 70s and later.
This is a definition brought to you by Steve Coolius.
I'm just reading this right off the internet right now. So proto-punk is like 60s and 70s that influenced punk rock. So then what do you call it? Post-punk?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what to call it. I mean, really, I think the one you put pop-punk is... It's not talking down to it. I hate it when people are like, you know, that's not real punk. And I remember growing up, that was a big thing too. Like I tell people like, yeah, man, I like Green Day. Oh yeah, the Green Day. No, you should listen to the Misfits. And I listen to the Misfits and it sounds like wine poured through a shoe. Like it's good, but it's like unlistened, like quality wise, it's just like, I'm like, okay, dude, I get it. They're scary and I get it, but it's a totally different thing. And I don't really listen to Green Day for the words. Like, I like Billy Joe. I like the way he acts, and I get why he sings like that. Like, if he sang like, you know, if he sang like an R&B singer, it would sound horrible. So I understand, like, his singing voice. I get it. But I don't really listen to it for the words. They have really good hooks, right?
So, wait, let me switch it up a little bit here, because there's a lot of individually good songs on here. We're going back to the whole, you know, song verse album feel of Dookie. Mm-hmm. So... You've had some chance to listen to it this week. What is your favorite song from the album?
My favorite song from the album is When I Come Around.
Typical.
Like, by far. It's so catchy. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I have a favorite song, to be honest with you, this album. I like Welcome to Paradise.
Okay.
Like, I was in a band with a drummer who was obsessed with Trey's drum playing. Would just tell me, like, because if you listen to him, he's playing fast as hell. He does feels like Welcome to Paradise. Do you hear the
drum? You're right.
Air drum that song one day and you'll be like, dude, I don't know what I'm doing with my body. This is like, I'm getting electrocuted.
You just start spazzing out. You can't keep up.
Yeah. And I don't think he had a double bass drum pedal. I think he did that all with one foot, like boom, 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 boom. Because to punk rock, like punk rockers normally don't have double bass pedals because that's more of like a metal thing and more of like a progressive rock thing. They want to be like just one foot. Like, I don't care how fast I have to play. Boom, 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 boom. It's like they're having a heart attack on the drum kit. The way that they play the guitar, like I used to play Longview all the time in my band, and it taught me how to play those bar chords to where it just sounds like one note, where you're not like, bring, you're not on an island. It's just like, you know, you're just, that's what they're great at. Billy Joe's great at playing the guitar like that.
And you're right, I'm not the biggest musician in the world, but yeah, when I play the bass a little bit, the bass lines on here are great because they're relatively simple, but they also carry a groove really well. They're not super complex or anything, but they fit the song perfectly.
That's the thing. Like, less is more sometimes on the bass. You know, that's why if you get me on a bass, I'll play way too much. And, you know, if I get you on a guitar, you won't play enough. And that's just how it works.
I don't know how.
Okay. That's all right. So what's your favorite song from the album, Steve? What song kind of caught you?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask that because, you know, it's a typical back and forth kind of thing. But I don't know if I have one. Like, I have kind of a story behind every single one of these songs.
Is it your favorite Green Day album?
Yes, okay. But American Idiot's a close second. But this one, like I said, just because of where I was at the time. But it's cool, like even Sassafras Roots, I'm just kind of looking at the lyrics now and it's almost like a love song. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, roaming around your house, wasting your time, no obligation, just wasting your time. Why are you alone wasting your time when you could be with me wasting your time? It's like,
right.
I'm kind of a waste of time, but how about we waste our time together? It's like, it's a Green Day's version of a love song. I just want to be with you. It's so sweet. Only it's like punk.
I feel like a lot of these songs are about, like, are for tailor-made for burnouts and stoners. Like,
if there was a theme to this album, you just pegged it.
Yeah, Longview's totally. I just want to be in my house, just avoid my parents and responsibility as long as I can.
And I think that's why my mom was a little concerned when I was 13 years old and listening to this record. Like, I think she started paying attention to it, and she's like, please don't turn into a burnout. You're too young to think this way.
Yeah, they, Roxy, right? She's not even two. And I put this album on for her, and she was like, no, stop! Like, she's
just too much.
She didn't know what to do with it, because it is kind of a mouthful. And later on, we'll talk about another band that's a mouthful, but for a punk band, yeah, they were a mouthful as far as lyrics goes, man. They were Billy Joe's constantly like talking and singing. And I don't know if I've ever told you this, but my feeling is that even if you don't hear or understand what the person's saying in the song, like a lot of Nirvana songs are like that, a lot of Green Day songs are like that, every Pearl Jam song is like that. you still get the feeling behind the song. That's the most important thing.
And the music conveys that. It doesn't have to be the words.
Well, no, the singer has to sound like he's 100% buying into what he's saying, or it just doesn't work. You know?
Okay.
They have to have passion behind it. But some of these songs, like Longview's, got some really deep lyrics, right? I mean, I've locked myself in my own cell and I've lost the key. Like, that's really, like, you're thinking about it. He's doing it to himself, right? It's like, No one's making me be this kind of a person. I'm just choosing it.
It kind of goes along with that burnout feel.
Yeah.
So you just mentioned Longview. That was one of the videos from the album.
Mm-hmm. It's the only one I remember.
Yeah. No, they had a few of them. Basket Case was the one that I remember. You know, the one where they're in the little insane asylum and the colors are like super vivid and they're standing there. It's like,
I think
Billy Joel starts out on his own and he starts jamming. And then, you know, Trey Cool is wheeled in the wheelchair, and then he starts banging on the drums from the wheelchair.
So, yeah, all these songs are great. It's really a great album. I hadn't listened to it in so long that I was tempted to just skip ahead, and I don't do that for these podcasts. I listen to the whole album. I listen to it start to finish and really try to, you know, get the whole feel. And when the last track, which you noted is a hidden track, I wouldn't know. Tell us about this, Steve. Tell us, Grandpa Steve, about hidden tracks and albums. Educate the people.
So what's funny is that, you know, I was young little Steve listening to this album, and I listened to it, you know, I bought the CD, popped it in my CD player, and it was the first time I ever came across a hidden track. It was the most amazing thing to me. It's like I really found a treasure. I found, like, something special where, you know, the track list only goes to FOD, and then I thought, that's all you get. And then I'm like, wait, the CD is not stopping. It's like still playing. Did they just add some empty space here? And then it starts out like a little ding, 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 ding. I'm like, wait, there's more. What is this? And it's a literal hidden track. Yeah, that's a great song.
You know, I was thinking this song reminds me of the Chili Peppers and Pea.
I can see that. Very simple, just like one dude singing on his own. It's not like not a big sound behind him.
Yeah, but people remember them. Like people, if you're a fan of Green Day, then you remember this. And if you're a fan of Red Hot Chili Peppers, you definitely know about P. and you could probably even sing it, because I mean, I could sing it right now. I know all the lyrics, and
who doesn't want to sing along with P?
Yeah, like it's funny. And I, when I listened through the album all the way to the end and it went back to Burnt Out, I was sad that there wasn't more songs. Like,
because
I was,
it's a short album. It's like 39 minutes, and most of the songs are less than 2.5 minutes. They're short, powerful songs.
Yeah, exactly.
Any album that has, what, like 15 songs on it, you'd expect to be longer than 40 minutes.
Yeah, I think people just kind of, I don't know, man, like Green Day's really popular. Green Day's they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, right?
Yeah, I think they were just inducted this year.
I guess some people, like, especially like music snobs, might get offended by it. Like, there's all these great bands and they're letting in Green Day. I don't think the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is meant to be like the only deciding factor in whether or not you are going to be a memorable musician. I think people give it a lot of stock, and I guess rightfully so, but it's not.
Yeah, there's a lot of bands out there that deserve to be in there that are not in there.
And they'll eventually get in there. And I mean, the way I look at it is that they're a business too. And Green Day deserves to be in there, but they're definitely going to get a lot more people, publicity, fans, sales from a band like Green Day that a lot of people love than if they went with some other band that isn't as popular. I mean, let's just be honest. Like, they have to justify like it.
Mitchum? What's the guy's name? The Yellow Rose of Texas guy?
No, let's not bring that up. Let's not bring that up.
Okay, sorry.
After this podcast, we might have to retire the Sucky Song of the Day, because I don't know how we're going to top it. I'm gonna have to.
Oh, I've been asking around. I got a whole lineup of Sucky Songs. You just wait and see.
That's great, Steve. I'm glad that you're on.
I've been doing my homework.
You're on the case.
So, there's never a dearth of Sucky Songs out there.
Speaking of bands like Green Day that maybe, you know, spawned off, you know, Redheaded Stepchildren, Three-Eyed Monster, crap bands. Recently, the bass player from Rage Against the Machine, his last name, it eludes me, but his name is Tim, apologized because apparently someone in Limp Bizkit was quoted as saying that Rage Against the Machine was why they started playing or why they created the band, and he apologized for, like, we apologize for that crap. Like, we apologize for that BS, basically. Which I thought was funny. But yeah, one day we should review a Limp Bizkit album, because it's definitely important that we don't have listeners and we talk about Limp Bizkit. No, but I actually
guaranteed way.
I actually think not $3 Bill, but the second album, the one that had Rearranged
Chocolate
on
Starfish
it.
And the Chocolate Flavored Water.
Was it that had Rearranged on it? Is that the album that had Rearranged on it? Because I thought there was one in the middle there.
I don't know. I wasn't really planning on talking about Limp Bizkit ever.
Ever. Then I will stop. So are they? I would say that Green Day, I don't know if they're better than better live or in the studio. I know that live they're a great band, but their studio albums are have a lot of energy.
But no, that's what's great about Green Day. It does bring them. They do bring that energy into a live setting. Like, their sets are larger than life. When you see them live, it's not just the band playing. It's like an extravaganza. They bring some gimmicks, but they also bring the energy. So, as good as their albums are, when you see them live, it's totally an excellent show.
What do you think of the extra musicians in the background? Do you think it's necessary at this point? Because I know I've read things before, people saying, like, oh, why do they have to have, like, you know, the extra guitar player guy, like, why do they have to, you know, have a backup vocalist? Like, is it something that I think maybe it's now you're expected to sound like the commercial product, and so they have to have the background guitar and they have to have the background tracks? I know something Jack White really passionate about is that. Jack White's really passionate about, I don't have to have a background, like, this is my band, like, we're playing music, we don't have backing tracks, we don't have all that stuff. How do you feel about it?
If I had to guess, it would just be because they bring that larger-than-life scene to the stage. Like, they probably don't need it to make that full sound. They're good enough musicians to bring it on their own. They know how to make that full sound. But when it comes to their live show, because they add all these extra people in there and they have these huge sets, it just makes it more of an event.
Yeah, and I think maybe it's just the size of the crowd. They just think they
play
have to be super loud.
Pretty big arenas.
Yeah. Do they ever do any, you would know, do they ever do any small shows that you've ever seen?
They did, but they did it under a different name. They are tricky like that. Once in a while, they'll do a show, Like, they released a whole album as the Foxborough Hot Tubs. And when it came out, it's like, oh, this sounds a lot like Green Day. And they were very covert about it. You couldn't even tell if it was them or not. And eventually, of course, you know, everybody found out everything.
Foxborough Hot Tubs. Wow, that's like the random band name generator.
That's probably what they used. Yeah, they kind of have to go covert to play small shows. And it seems like that's exactly what they do.
Well, good for them, man. I know that they deserve all the success they've gotten. And not every album's going to be, you know, the best album, but I feel like Dookie was, that's a hell of an album. And you're definitely more of the expert than I am. So when it comes to similar artists, what would you say is a similar artist?
All right, I already blew that out before. Blink-182 is the closest thing I could think of.
I feel like yes, but the singing is not the same. It's not on par. Like,
yes and no, because Blink-182 has a distinct vocal style. Like,
right.
What's the name? What's the dude from Blink-182?
The bass player who looks like my asshole.
Yeah, him. No, the singer. Whatever his name is, he has a distinct singing style. And so does Billy Joe. Whether or not his voice is distinct, his style definitely is.
I mean, there's good Blink-182 songs. I mean, maybe one of these days we can think of a Blink-182 album, but I think they're more of a song band. I don't know if they ever had a good album front to back, but that's just me. I don't know. All I know, my favorite song is Adam's song, and I think two of them sing in that song. I think two of the band members sing in that song, in Adam's song. It's not just one guy. Like, just one person does the chorus and one person does the verse, right? Because it turns into like, here's your holiday! And it had a great music video. Remember, it was just like a bunch of wind blowing through like a skate park and then into a house. And I think that's when they got the... You've never seen the video for Adam's song, man?
I've got to check that out.
And now they're not a band anymore. Like, I guess they disbanded. They couldn't get through their contract negotiations. And they broke up, last I heard. They're bummer. No longer, yeah. Well, bummer for people who like Blink-182 a lot, of all which right, I am point. Not. So I think Offspring is a closer resemblance. Offspring, to me, is a closer resemblance. I'm just going to say it out loud. I love Offspring. Like, I love Offspring. We should do one of their albums one of these days. To me, it's closer than Blink-182 because the singing in it, I've tried to sing Offspring. Like, I've tried to sing it. It is not easy. Like, it is hard. That dude can yell and scream, and it's similar to what Green Day does. It's
an art form.
I think it's more upbeat than Blink-182. Blink-182 is even more pop than Green Day. Their album structures are really, like, you know, square. Green Day, Dookie, man, Dookie's got some stuff in there that, like, the rhythms switch up and stuff. Things, you know, change. It's not just blah, 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 blah. It's very switchy. It's very cool.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. I can hear that.
And who the heck is Pennywise and Operation Ivy? Can you tell me? They sound like superheroes.
They kind of came out around the same time, and they weren't quite as popular, but they definitely had that same sound. They were, you know, just the full thrash, maybe even a little bit harder than Green Day.
Okay, I hear you. And Rancid, I've seen some things with Rancid. I have a friend of mine who likes Rancid, and I don't. Yeah, that's really hardcore stuff. That's like, you come to this skate park, you get your ass beat, kid. We're listening to Rancid.
Yeah, skate music.
Yeah,
skate music was big in the '90s.
Categorized as that. Steve breaks it down.
One of the questions that we usually go over that we haven't touched on yet is what we like. Easy. One word. Everything. What we didn't like, that's a lot harder to find with this album. What don't you like about this album?
I mean, I there's nothing I didn't like about it. Like, I mean, honestly, like, I listened to it and I my initial take was like, oh, like, two or three of these songs are just going to turn me off to it. And if, like I said, when it was over, I was like, oh, man, it's over? Like, dang, I wish they had four more songs in this album. When they were writing this, I wish they'd just written more music for it. Like,
so what you didn't like is that it's not long enough. You wanted it to be longer.
Yeah, it's a pretty short album. But that's neither here nor there. There's nothing I don't like in this album. I'll be honest with you. I could be judgmental about Green Day, and I could say all this stuff about Green Day. I think they're an awesome group, and I think anybody who criticizes them by quoting someone else is probably pissed that they didn't make it in life or something. That's the way I look at it. It's like, you know,
making up for something.
Yeah, they're like, oh yeah, you know, this band is so much better and they ripped off of them. And, you know, like, I've heard so many things and I'm like, maybe you're just salty. Maybe you're just being salty about your life and you're putting it into Green Day terms.
So we've been talking about this album quite a while now. There's plenty more we still have to cover.
Bonus double podcast. So this week, let's go over these events. These events that Steve, this week you put the events together, which is great. And all of these events happened this week. So cozy up, kids. Open up your textbooks. Let's get down to some music history. So what happened in 1965 is Johnny Cash was arrested crossing the Mexican border into El Paso, Texas, after some good old Johnny Brown Q found hundreds of pills in his guitar case. Somehow, Buddy received a suspended jail sentence and a $1,000 fine. I'ma call bullshit. It's because he was famous. He probably should have been in jail, but it was
I know.
Good.
If you think about it, hundreds of pills.
Yeah, like how do you excuse that away? Like, what was he like? Was he just? I could just picture him like sitting there getting questioned, and then they're like, "What did you have these pills for?" And he's like, I heard a train a-coming, rolling down the bend. They're like, you're that guy. Oh, wow.
Yeah, and this is not just like, hey, I'm on the road, I'm going from state to state, I'm on tour. No, this is like crossing the Mexican border, like bringing hundreds of pills. And he put them in the guitar case. Like, dude, you're Johnny Cash. I'm sure that you have like a tour bus with some hidden compartment somewhere. Don't make it so easy, like so cliche.
Or he could have used like a drug mule. Or just bought him somewhere else. My thing is that if you know, you've seen Walk the Line before, like after that event, he, you know, his family kind of broke apart and then he had to kind of find himself. And
oh, was this it? Was this like the thing that changed everything for him?
Yeah, like after this, he was hanging out with like Waylon Jennings and like, you know.
No good can ever come of that.
No, never. I mean, the guy's name is Waylon. You know, sums up.
But his last name is Jennings.
It's just funny, right? He got the benefit of being famous, and got a suspended jail sentence. That's I mean, it's good, I guess, for music history. But yeah, guy's a legend. It's not good to have hundreds of pills in your guitar case. That's how you can tell you're a druggie. You put them in your guitar case, like walk through the airport, hundreds of pills. He was probably rattling. I bet you the officers didn't even have to like scope them out. They were just like, sir, is that guitar case full of maracas or beans? Sir, you can't bring beans over from Mexico. Like, customs just had a field day. So yeah, that's great. In 1988, one of the greatest albums ever, rock albums ever, Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon, finally fell off the Hot 200 album chart after a record-breaking run of 741 weeks.
Yeah, that equals 14 years. 741 weeks, nothing can ever beat that. There is no album that came close to 14 years on the charts.
The first day that album went on that chart, 14 years later, some kid bought it the day it fell off the chart. That is crazy. I mean, and it's no secret that it's a great album.
You know, that kid was probably me. 1988 is when CDs started coming around. And that was, so when we got our first CD player, my dad took us to the CD store and we all got to pick something out, and I picked out mine, which might end up on an episode of Sucky Album of the of the Week. But my dad picked up Dark Side of the Moon because he wanted to hear it in high fidelity. So he sat me down and he put on headphones and he's like, Steve, you got to hear this one intro to Money. Because you know how the money noise kind of bounces back and forth from ear to ear. And he's like, this is so awesome. You got to check it out. And that was probably 1988. That was probably when CDs, you know, started coming around. We got our first CD player. Yeah, exactly what you're talking about. 14 years later, people were still buying it. It just didn't make the top 200 anymore.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure it was like 202 or something. That's a long time to be on an album chart for sales. And, you know, there's so much we could say. We'll probably have to dedicate a whole episode to talk about Dark Side of the Moon, but well-deserved 14 years on that chart, and glad I got some of that in my life via Steve. because that's a little connection we have. Some welcome, actually, some welcome to the machine.
I remember that moment we were sitting in the car, and that changed your life. You were a tiny little kid. You were a tiny little Cuban kid growing up in South Florida listening to Cuban music. Like, dude, let me show you what it's really all about.
By force. Listen, I grew up on Cuban music and Christian rock. Like, I was headed down a really spiral staircase of sucky music. And, yeah, Welcome to the Machine hit my ears. And then I came back. My friend Hunter turned me on to Physical Graffiti by Zeppelin. And I was just like, whoa. And that's why those two bands are still my number ones, because they were my intros to rock were Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin. And I was like, okay.
You've never been the same.
Yeah, I was like, there's a lot more out there, definitely.
So then in 2004, just this week in 2004, was when Howard Stern made his big announcement that 2 years later he was going to move over to Sirius Satellite Radio. He had like 12 million listeners at the time. He was at the height of his career. And he's like, sorry guys, I'm moving on to the next big thing, satellite radio. Right. And what surprised me about this is that like in 2004, we still didn't even know the potential of the internet. It was only, what, 11 years ago? And he's like, hey, I'm going to do satellite radio because it's super technologically advanced. But anyone who, especially who had Howard Stern's, you know, listener base and power, someone today saying they're going to satellite radio just wouldn't make any sense. Now we have Beats One on Apple, and we have, you know, internet. Anyone can make their own podcast. He can go solo and still keep his 12 million listeners.
Right. I think the thing is, and this is where I disagree with you a little bit, is that he definitely understood that satellite, and when he signed that deal, he must have known that satellite was going to be installed in all new vehicles, and in some cases even used vehicles, for free for that first period. And I think his whole thing is like, hey, if someone gets hooked on me, then they'll pay for the subscription and I'll get my money. Yeah, could he have had other methods of doing it? I know he goes through like the web now and he has other things. I guess maybe my opinion is a little different than yours, because I think it was calculated in the fact that all these new cars come with Sirius. He's got the biggest, like, if you get the lineup, his name is the biggest name on the Sirius lineup card. Like, I think it's geared to, hey, listen to this guy, you're going to like him. And I just recently saw Private Parts and I thought I wasn't going to like it. And I watched the movie and I'm like, this guy's not a total DB. Like, he's, you know what I mean? Like, they go over his life.
Well, he can still be a total DB and you can still...
I don't know. Like, I mean, the whole thing, you know, he was trying to be loyal to his wife and then he had a family. Like, you know, like, you see all this other side of people that you're like, you know, maybe he does that on the radio and it's his job. And yeah, I mean, he's an asshole. But the point is that he's an asshole that isn't, I guess, I thought he would be like a real life womanizer. I guess he just does it as an act. That's kind of weird. How the hell does he get away with that? I don't know.
He's a shock jock. That's his shtick.
It was a good movie. That's all I got to say. Like, it did great. It must have done great things for his PR, because I watched it all the way through and I laughed like a million times. I'm like, this is hilarious that, you know, he worked at these crappy radio stations where, like, you know, they tried to make him do country and he's like, I can't do this. I'm out. Like, just like.
Hey, he stood up for what he wanted. That's what got him 12 million listeners by 2004.
Well, that and Robin was in the movie with him too. And I think that was probably why it was so good, because she's really who makes the show, not Howard.
I almost kind of like her better than Howard.
Oh, yeah,
of course. Don't tell him I said that.
No, she's like the Oprah of that show.
All right, so that's this week in music history. Some pretty, pretty important stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
So for our next section, we're going to talk about decades in music. And you picked this one. This is we picked the 70s this week, and we picked Rush.
Your least favorite decade in music, 1970s.
Yeah, 70s were... Very few things came out of the 70s that are worthwhile music wise.
I think you just you're being like Eric from that 70s show when it comes to that. I think the disco's got you all weirded out, man.
Disco does have a big part of my hatred of the 70s.
Right. Yeah, I mean, like, there's bad disco, there's good disco too. There was disco that came out of Milwaukee that was really good. I can't think of any of them right now because it's disco.
Because it doesn't exist.
But yeah, it was good. So this week I picked Rush for the decades of the 70s. And
why?
Because really they're I guess recently they got some recognition, but they're they're what was right in the 70s rock. They were, you know, I think bands like them, and even though Yes started way before the 70s, that kind of progress, they were just a great progressive rock band. And speaking of bands that are a mouthful, you know, aka Green Day, Rush, mouthful, whole ton of things being said, super, so many words, and the songs has a lot of meanings. And I started out not liking Rush. Like, I did not like the way he sang. I did not like the way he sang. I was always just like, dude, this guy's voice is just driving me nuts.
Well, let me interject here a little bit, because we also had Sean's influence. At the time when we were introduced to Rush, we were working together, and we had this one coworker that was insane about Rush. Like, not only was it his favorite band in the world, but it was like his favorite thing in life was to listen to Rush. And he loved it so much that it turned anyone else off.
Well, let's be real here. It was the dissonance between the music of Rush and who Sean is as a person. So you,
I mean, you're just totally inclined to hate anything he likes because of who he is. Well, yeah,
he was a total meathead. And when we found out, like, you know, oh, you like Rush, we're like, oh, this band. Just, you know, like, I didn't know enough about Rush to have any opinion other than this guy's a loser and he's gonna like this. But he wasn't a loser, but this guy's really mean and like total frat boy. And he likes Rush. And then when I listen to Rush, I've told you this before, like listening to Closer to the Heart, I'm like, you're like the complete opposite of this song, Sean. Like, everything they're talking about in here, like the trees, dude, you are that tree that's complaining about the light, I think. You are them. Like, he's crazy, man. So, Rush.
They do have a lot of really good songs. Like, when you started listing them out here, Tom Sawyer, Limelight, Spirit of the Radio, Working Man, Closer to the Heart. You put them all together, and it does make for one killer soundtrack.
Right, and if you haven't seen the documentary already, that they have, Beyond the Lighted Stage, it's a great documentary to just understand Rush the band. I mean, Geddy Lee was the child to, basically his grandparents were Holocaust survivors, and he dealt, where he lived, they were the only Jewish family in, I believe it was Toronto or Montreal. I don't know. I think it was somewhere in Canada. I don't know where. I think it was Montreal. They were the only Jewish family. He went through a lot of anti-Semitism, got made fun of a lot for his looks, his taste in music.
I mean, his looks. He's a twerp.
I mean, yeah.
What's funny, for the longest time, you know, when I listened to Rush, I had a friend of mine tell me that Geddy Lee was this big biker dude who had like a huge beard, and he like wore leather vests all the time, and you hear his voice and it's super duper high. Like, he's got the highest voice ever. He's like squeaking.
He's Canadian Robert Plant, man. He's really high.
All right, that's a good way to put it. And then I had this friend of mine kind of feeding me this fake story about how he's like a super butch dude. What? And he's got that high voice, and I believed him for the longest time. And when I finally saw live, I saw pictures of him, or like, you know, I saw a video of him. I'm like, that can't be Rush. Like, that's not who I had pictured in my head the whole time. But no, it turns out he's actually pretty twerpy looking.
Yeah, so you talked about their songs. They have a lot of good songs. I live in Cleveland now, where Working Man gave them their break into the States from Canada. People listen to Working Man. If you watch the documentary, you'd know this. When they listened to Working Man here on the radio in Cleveland, they were like, when's the new Zeppelin album coming out? Because they thought it was Zeppelin. They were convinced that was a Zeppelin song. Like, Working Man is an amazing track. And then after, when they got Neil Peart on the drums, he started writing all the lyrics. Their music obviously became more complex. And the things that I think they've affected, at least on culture and music, is that it's more important to play from your heart than for your pocketbook.
Closer to your heart.
Exactly. They had a big decision to make, and the record labels were on them, and they came out with 2112. They basically said, throw my fingers up, we're making a concept album, it's going to have one song on one of the sides, and deal with it. And that album catapulted them into cult fandom, where people totally understood that these guys were for real. But that just goes to who they are, and I think it starts mostly with Neil Peart just being anti-commercialism and understanding that it's okay not to be accepted, it's okay to be weird. They kind of made that popular. And in the 70s, how many weird kids must there have been? I mean, there's weird kids today, but in the 70s, like, you were weird for just looking normal. Like, how many times have you seen, like, one of these movies where, like, they're picking on this kid and you're like, dude, Like, what's wrong with him? Like, he's wearing a t-shirt and jeans, just like you. Like, why are you kicking his ass again? Like, I don't get it. So it was a tough time, and I think they connected with a lot of fans that way. And they influenced way more musicians than we know, especially famous musicians. They have so much influence across that space. The way that I appreciated Rush is that I went into a band with a guy who used to be in a Rush tribute band. We started playing Rush songs, and then I realized, okay, yeah, this band is very musical. This band is, like, really, really, you know, has a lot of chops. Not everybody's cup of tea, and I get that. You know, they make jokes that no girls come to their concerts. There's a reason for that. They're very much, they're not, like, the attractive, sexy-looking outfit.
And they are a dude band.
They didn't know how to dress in the 70s either. Like, every freaking, like, thing you see them in, like, there was, like, one album where they dressed in, like, kimonos. And, like, Geddy Lee had, like, the straight black hair, which doesn't help the size of his nose at all. And speaking of twerps, between Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson, Alex Lifeson has, like, this giant, when he talks, he's, like, he kind of talks like this. Like, he has, like, a giant lisp and is very, I guess effeminate's a bad word, but sort of like an effeminate kind of talking. And then Neil Peart, nobody knows what he sounds like because he's so reclusive and hidden. But I love them. I think they're great. And I don't know, Steve. I think maybe I kind of was like, hey, Rush isn't bad, man. Listen to this. I know I've tried to force you to listen to, like, a song. Like, listen to this Rush song. You'll love it. But it might not be
in most cases, I do. It's very progressive music. They switched up a whole lot. They're good musicians.
That's about it. So tell us, Steve, the moment we've all been waiting for. And not a lot of this podcast is getting cut, people. So if you're still here, you made it. You totally made it. You deserve to be here. Steve, let's talk about this song for a second, and I'll just let you kick it off.
All right. This is the part where we talk about the sucky song of the day. And for the first 2 weeks, you picked the song, and this week I said, all right, I have the suckiest song of ever.
Well,
so let
ever.
Me jump on this. It is. It's called Wicked Game by Chris Isaak. Not sure if you've heard of it. If you haven't, don't. But if you've heard of it, if you were around in, like, 1990, there's no way you could have missed it. Chris Isaak was almost like a sex symbol at the time. Like, he showed up on, like, TV shows. He was, like, a guest star on an episode of Friends. But this song, dude, like, it's the worst. And I could really boil it down to two words. F***ing falsetto. The dude sings in... He yodels.
He's like, well, he does this really
don't.
Unnatural switch that when he's singing, it's like so unnatural.
He cracks his voice in such a way it goes through my spine. It's like worse than nails on a chalkboard. Like, this is probably one of those songs I could have played in Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah, this is almost as bad as waterboarding, I think, is what you're trying to say. Like, honestly, yeah. I preferred to have, like, physical harm than having to listen to this song.
It is physical harm. Like, it hurts to listen to this song. So we were brainstorming about this song, and you actually had some pretty good snippets here. You called him a broke ass wannabe Morrissey.
He is.
Which,
like,
I can totally relate to.
He's Morrissey with just less style, and so, like, the style is just so forced on you that you're like, dude, really? Like, he's like the guy that the Rick Rolled guy. He starts out singing like him, and then he goes into the la. I mean, it's like, what are you doing?
It shows his potential. You know, he has a decent voice. I don't want to give him credit for anything. He just sucks all around.
I mean, he puts me into a mental coma with the song. And then the little background voices are like, don't want to fall in love. Don't want to fall in love. Like, really? Was that required?
That was the sign of the times. That has 90s written all over it.
Yeah, it was, all the lyrics are just, like, it's such a, oh, poor me, pity me. It's like, bro, you're like a good-looking guy in the 90s. I mean, the music video, he's got Helena Christensen, who's, like, super hot.
If there is any saving grace to this song, it is the music video. I mean, like, right. Helena Christensen on the beach, black and white.
They showed crack. Like, I've not seen many videos where a supermodel's butt crack is shown on display.
It's a beautiful thing.
I'm like, I'm here. But then when he's singing, he's like an inch away from her nose. There's like a whole segment there where I'm like, wouldn't you be bothered if this guy, and he doesn't look like he's singing either. He looks like he's whispering, which annoys me even more because I'm like, dude, I'm pretty sure it's not that hard to falsetto the word I the way you're doing it.
No, when you suck this much, you can totally whisper falsetto all you want. But yeah, the video ended up winning like a bunch of awards. It was like MTV Video Music Awards got the best male video, best cinematography, and best video from a film.
I wonder if this song was used by Cameron Crowe or something. Do you think it was used?
No,
by
it was
Cameron
in
Crow?
A movie called Wild at Heart with Nicolas Cage.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what that movie is. And it was such a good year for movies. Like Robin Hood came out with that Bryan Adams song, Everything I Do For You, I Do It For You. And Blaze of Glory was on the Young Guns soundtrack by Bon Jovi. Like, there were so many.
So wait, what are you talking about? It was a good year for movies, but it was a terrible year for music. Because Everything I Do It For You is not a good song at all. No.
We'll have to disagree on that.
It's a power ballad.
Yeah, but in terms of power ballads, it's decent. I wouldn't make it the suckiest song of the day. It's definitely no Wicked Game.
I mean, no, it's not. Whatever the heck he's saying, I don't care. It's just, yeah, you're right. It's pretty terrible.
Oh, you know what else came out that year? That was Terminator 2. You Could Be Mine by Guns N' Roses came out that year. Like, that was a great year for movies, for music in movies. And this stupid freaking song had to win over all of those for a movie that I don't even know. Like, Nicolas Cage, I'm sure. People liked it.
Yeah, people liked Nicolas Cage back then. Like before, what's that movie, Con Air? And then, what other terrible movies he had? The Wicker
National
Man.
Treasure.
We've all wasted at least an hour and a half of our lives watching The Wicker Man. And realizing
not all
that
of
was,
us.
Oh, man. Well, you should someday. When you
no,
just
at least
you...
I'm glad this conversation's taken a turn that we don't have to like keep reminding us ourselves of how horrible this stupid Wicked Game song is.
Well, while we've been talking, it's playing in the background, so that's just as bad, right? I mean, they're.
Oh, we're
going to
subject our listeners to listen to this song. I'm sorry, guys. You're going to torture people with this.
And at the very end, I'm going to just loop that. And
you seem more obsessed with that than.
Well,
you just
the thing
keep
is,
kicking it back to that.
You want to know something about me that I enjoy when it comes to bad songs is that I like talking about them. It's not because I'm a huge hater. I know that's what it sounds like. But just because I know what it takes to put your heart behind writing a song and all that. And like, you know, you write it so that people will listen to it. And I feel like this is a song that this guy wrote so that he could sing it to himself while he beats off in front of a mirror. Like, nobody needed to hear this song, dude. Nobody. Like, the world would have just been fine. You're not appreciated at all. But he had some good hair, dude. Totally 90210 approved. Congratulations.
He was good for that.
So, everybody, thanks for listening. Steve, thanks for being here. Thanks for being you.
Thank you, man. I couldn't do without you.
That's right. Remember to subscribe, share, and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. All right, man. Well, cool, Steve. I'm done. You done?
I'm out of here.
All right, brother. Well, yeah, everybody. Everybody, hope you listen to this podcast. And remember, like us, subscribe, and tell all your friends about us because we really appreciate it.
Peace.
Peace. Shut up.
Idiot.
Whatever. Hey, give me my money.
Slapping the best.